What is going on, everybody? This is Jimmy. This is another episode of the Horrific Podcast, man. We've got the Halloween music, Halloween party music, I should say, playing as we are making our way towards actual haunt season. And today we can officially start to give us some haunt season dates. But first and foremost, off of the top, I lied to you last week thinking that we were going to get into some panels from the Halfway to Halloween event this week. We are not yet going to, just because awesome problem to have. We have a very cool guest for you today. The composer of Netflix hit show Black Summer is coming on the show. Alec Puro will be here, and he is talking about season one and two of Black Summer, composing music, horror music in general, films, all of it coming up in just a little bit. But let's get into the news and housekeeping of the week. Of course, big news there coming off of the Halloween Kills trailer coming on board, and the news of whether or not that trailer looked good. The reaction for Halloween Kills was pretty much a continuation of Halloween 2018, in my opinion, so far. While the violence has definitely amped up, it feels more true to the original Halloween franchise by the trailer. I'm not blown away. 2018 didn't blow me away, and this trailer didn't blow me away like some other projects have blown me away. So Halloween Kills, it's going to be on the Haunt Tour. We are going to be doing a meetup in October for that. We're also going to be doing a meetup for Candyman for a season finale here in late August. And the season finale of Campfire Chronicles is going to be in late August, because more so than ever, we have some coverage, some haunt season. 2021, the revenge year of haunt season for sure. September 11th, it starts out with Hollow Scream. September 16th is Halloween 4 on the Universal Roblox server. September 20th, Halloween 3. September 20th is HHN 4. September 24th is the Jacked Up Experience at the Cabana Bay Hotel. September 25th, 26th, we are doing Halloween Horror Nights 30. Also on the 26th, we will be taking part in the Unmasking the Horror HHN Tour. We're just calling it Unmasking HHN 30. And that podcast, that Unmasking podcast, could potentially take the spot away from Hollywood, HHN Hollywood, for the season finale of this haunt season, just because that's something pretty cool. So those are the dates. And like I just said, Halloween Kills will be added there for an October date, and there are some October dates that are already pretty solidly locked in, and we are looking forward to when the time comes. So with that, man, haunt season is in full swing. Announcements of Hollow Screams coming to San Diego SeaWorld pretty much puts Halloween Horror Nights their back up against the wall here. And I would expect them to announce something, at least put tickets on sale for HHN LA relatively soon, probably when after the 4th of July. If you go back and you look at HHN and the history of their announcements, they only started really announcing stuff early, you know, spring, early summer, a couple of years ago. Before, it really used to be mid-July through August, and every week there was an announcement. There was some kind of, hey, this is coming. This is going to be here. This is a show. This is... So I honestly think mid to late July, you're going to see stuff happen rapidly, especially on the West Coast. Not Scary Farm has tickets on sale. Like, they're planning on doing something. Hollow Scream now in California is a big deal. Fright Fest is all going to be part of this mini Midsummer Scream convention in July in Long Beach. Yeah, man. Things are definitely picking up all throughout the country. It's supposed to be a Halloween party playlist, and it is letting me down. Here we go. Anyway, it's time to get back into the swing of things and be really, really amped up on haunt season, as we are as well. Also, August 15th, just a couple weeks before Campfire Chronicles ends, we will be back in person for Sinister Creature Con. And we are very much looking forward to that event as well. So, I'll tell you what, man. We are excited. We are happy. We are looking forward to seeing everything that there is to see movie-wise. If you want our thoughts on Conjuring 3, you can listen to Campfire Chronicles on our channel. You can also let us know in the comments what movies you would like to see us reveal and debate about whether or not they should be a haunted house. Anyway, let's get into this interview. Black Summer composer Alec Puro is on the show, and we are excited to bring this interview to you. So here you go. Netflix is always popping out with cool shows about just about any topic matter you can handle. And as a horror fan, I'm constantly on there looking at stuff. And a few years back, I found a really cool season one of an alternative to Walking Dead zombie series called Black Summer. Super dope. Season two just dropped on the 17th, I believe, is when we saw it updated and we were checking it out. And Black Summer, man, like I just said, it's an alternative to The Walking Dead, but it very much is still in that vein of a badass zombie show. And today I am super excited to have composer Alec Puro on the show to talk about the music of Black Summer, season one and two, and just horror in general. But Alec, man, how are you doing? Hey,
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you, buddy. And we, season two, congratulations, just came out out there on Netflix, available for people to check out. I know a lot of people, our convention that we do this in person in Northern California, the director of the convention was literally talking about on his Facebook some of season two this morning. So
that's awesome.
People are starting to definitely check it out, and the initial reactions, I'm about halfway through, but the initial reactions of the thing are, again, positive. So congratulations, and
thank you.
Thank you for the creepy vibes of what has been two seasons of this show. What was it, if we can kind of rewind the clock? I know sure. It was brand new, but when you were coming on board – and you're checking out, you know, the footage and stuff and getting to compose this thing, what was it for you as a music writer that drew you to this project?
I mean, first and foremost, John Himes, who created the show and, you know, is the showrunner and director. I mean, he's first and foremost what drew me to the show. You know, we've been friends a really long time and never had a chance to work together for years and years, and then this opportunity came up and he kind of, you know, started talking to me about the show very, very early on, like way before anything was shot, was sharing kind of, you know, scripts and different things, talking about music. You know, we definitely share the same kind of musical sensibility when it comes to film and TV.
Sure.
And, you know, the process on this show is a little bit different than other shows that I score, to where, you know, in season one, before they had even started shooting, we're talking about music. And then he was like, why don't you just go like experiment with stuff and just start writing? And in my head, a lot of times when, you know, that's presented to you, you know, you go and do it. But a lot of times, you know, when you go to actually score the show, when there's footage, that stuff is out the window and you're kind of starting over.
Right.
But in the case of Black Summer, we were so on the same page that I started writing, you know, I think I wrote like 20 or 30 really long pieces, you know, 2 to 4 minutes, something like that, where I went in and just started experimenting with, you know, different sounds, just trying to really like deconstruct things and, you know, destroy things with effects pedals and, you know, different processors and things to kind of, you know, mirror that world in Black Summer, which is just complete, you know, just destruction and like survival.
Yeah.
And I wrote all these pieces that John was really digging. You know, we went back and forth on certain things to really kind of, you know, I wanted to really get in his head and, you know, figure out his vision. And, you know, they went to shoot. And then as I was starting to see footage, to my surprise, a lot of these pieces were sort of temped in as ideas. And from there, we would kind of sit down, you know, spot an episode, watch the episode and kind of talk about the cues where like, hey man, this general vibe works, but what if it, you know, developed here? And so then I would sort of go back, since I had made a lot of the themes ahead of time, it was more about then sort of scoring the picture and making things, you know, fit and work and whatnot. So
that's interesting to hear you say that they came to you and you got to start messing with stuff before you even saw anything, because out of the composers that we have interviewed, this is the first time I've ever hearing that. It's always
the first time I've literally ever gotten to do that.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
It's really, I mean, when it works out, it's amazing because it's kind of the most freeing thing ever. I mean, I love scoring the picture and that's, you know, that's what I do. But there is a complete difference when you're not kind of trying to, you know, fit this into here so it hits with this and builds to this. And, you know, when it's just like, you know what, I'm just going to like go, like, here's this crazy sound that I like came up with or made or found. And that, you know, there's no rules. I can just like, and John's really open to that. And it's a really cool thing because, you know, obviously when we go to score the show, the sound design is such a huge part of the show that there's a really delicate dance between the score and the sound design, to where there's certain points when you're like, you wouldn't even notice there was music in there because it's really kind of helping.
Yeah. Kind of compliment.
Yeah, exactly. Compliment what's happening. So.
And so with that, because that's another great point, is I think a casual fan, movie fan, not just Black Summer fan, because I know I sure did before I went to school and was doing classes, even though I knew I was never going to be a sound designer or a composer. The school that I went to in LA, like, you like sat in on those classes, like, just so you could see what, like, best case scenario, when you go and you find a composer for your film, you know, have an understanding of what they're having to do for you. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until in those classes that I was really able to segregate composing and everything that goes into sound design.
Yeah.
Because like you just said, the complementary nature of something like Black Summer, the two just go, they interweave with one another.
Yeah.
So what was that like, you know, working with, you know, that team and collaborating and coming up with the final product?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times, we'd have discussions ahead of time in terms of like, you know, some of the like main sound design that might be in there so that I could like, you know, kind of stay out of the way. Like if there's a huge like rumbling furnace going, it's like I'm going to stay away from any like big like low end pads or bass sounds, or you know, and really try to fit it in there. But you know, like with all shows, when I'm kind of done scoring, I send the music to the mix stage, and in doing that, you know, I send them stems of everything. So sometimes, you know, we'll like lose, you know, a synth or a different sound to kind of make room for the sound design. But the cool thing about this show is, you know, when it's appropriate, there are, you know, some serious like music up moments, but there's a lot of things that like, you know, when you stay out of the way and you kind of service the story and what's happening on the screen, and the way Black Summer shot with these long, you know, one take, you know, documentary style things, it's like it makes it so much, it feels so much more real and terrifying when it's not just like wall to wall music. And it sometimes is wall to wall music and you can't even tell, you know what I mean? So it's a really fun show to work on.
So when you guys wrap season one, did you know immediately that season two was on the horizon and what it was going to continue? Because any more, you know, on the fan side of it, any more with Netflix, we don't know A, if we're going to get a season two, and if we B, if we lucky enough are to get a season two, we don't know anymore if it's going to be like a Ryan Murphy thing where same cast, but maybe it's a totally different perspective, different story. Like, I was sitting there at the end of season one hoping that it was just a linear, you know, like we were just going to get the continuation. You can't bet on that safely anymore. So did you know, you know, what was going on? What kind of a time gap to rev back into it did you have there?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's always hard to know, especially now that, you know, at least a lot of the shows that I'm scoring are streamers. It's like you kind of get like watered down information, you know, as it's given. With Black Summer, there was there's always a hope like, oh, is there going to be season two? It seemed like season one did really well, but it took a long time to kind of lock that in. I think there was some like behind the scenes stuff in terms of, you know, just Netflix and producers, and I'm not really sure, but you know, we had an idea there would be season one or season two, excuse me, but we didn't really know when. But when it did kind of kick in, of course they started shooting, and like we finished about half the episodes were shot, and then COVID hit. So that kind of like, you know, slowed things down, even though whatever was finished, we were able to do post on. And then there was just like, you know, a month or two after that before they kind of got to shoot the rest of the episodes. But I mean, all in all, it probably took a year because of, you know, COVID. And it was weird. I just went back and like, you know, started watching some of the show, and there are like scenes in there that I'm like, oh my God, I totally forgot that I even scored that because it was so, I did it so long ago.
Wow.
But then there's the more like recent stuff, like episode 207, where, you know, I just finished that in Christmas or whatever. So,
You know, that is kind of a trippy thing to sit there and actually contemplate in my mind. You were scoring a zombie series in the middle of a
pandemic. Yeah, totally. It's very appropriate.
Like, that is pretty wild. So yeah. I mean, from a fan standpoint, you know, what can you say, you know, what would be your kind of stinger if someone hasn't started season two yet? What do you and, you know, the crew that you have, you know, talked to and everything, what do you think the overall expectation from your guys' side to our side would be as far as season two and the experience that it brings?
I mean, for me, I mean, season two just ups the ante. It just definitely, to me, takes it to a whole other level. And I mean, everybody who works on this show brings their A game, and I feel like everything about it is next level. Not that season one wasn't like that, but it's just different. It's just like, you know, the backdrop for the show now is like, you know, takes place in the winter. So there's just like the elements of snow and just this vast landscape. It's just the way it's done. I don't know. It was really impressive to kind of go back and watch, because I wasn't able to be at a lot of the mixes or really any of them because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times I won't really go back and watch a show that I scored. You know, you kind of just want to like move to the next and whatnot. But this one, like I literally binged it and was like, oh my God, I feel so lucky to be a part of this. This is amazing. Like the music I get to make and how that just the production on the show, the way it's shot, it's like, you know, there's these takes that like, they're seemingly one take for like 7 minutes. Like just right. Crazy. Just, it's just done really thoughtful and really well. And, I think for sure, if you were a fan of season two is going to for sure blow your mind. But, yeah, it's a cool show. Definitely proud of it.
And those long takes that you mentioned, that is one of those things. I talked about the sound and the music and not knowing the work, but the work that goes into long takes like that, like yes. That's crazy. And the fact that the show executes them repeatedly and it wasn't just like a special, the cool take they did that one episode. It's like, No, that is the show. It makes that show that much cooler, man.
It's fun.
The music, you know, you mentioned the elemental aspect of it, which eventually, no matter what universe or what kind of story the zombie, you know, heroes exist in, the elements really become a threat sooner than later, because eventually you're running out of stuff and you're dealing with climate no matter where you are. And that, I thought that, you know, it brought a different vibe to your work. The mood of the show does shift from season one to season two to, you know, upping the ante, you know, for the characters. It kind of ups the how far would you go factor and the desperation factor. And so with that, going from one to two, and maybe you were writing music for characters in season one, and now you're writing for that same character, but the music has evolved. Mm-hmm. Do you have any like certain characters that you like have just become like a fan of, and then that transitions into the music?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, especially, so there are for sure some themes from season one that kind of come back and, you know, have an evolution in season two. But then there were a lot of new themes that I did write for, like this one character Spears. He has, mm-hmm. you know, a cool episode, you know, that's kind of, you know, mainly about him and his journey in season two. To me, it was really, really interesting and cool. So I got to kind of like write him a specific thing that, I think works really well. And, yeah, I mean, it's just always fun to take into consideration like the environment, because it just played such a big part of season two for me, that, you know, you want to stay out of the way of all these like natural sounds like wind or, you know, snow falling, or, you know, I was trying to kind of emulate some of that stuff with certain sounds, but at the same time kind of stay out of the way and be able to support them, because I knew that, you know, if you're like out in the wilderness by yourself, it's like, and just, it's not quiet, you know, even though it is, and it's you want to feel that realness and that kind of, you know, the kind of how terrifying it can be.
For sure. You know, this beyond this show, man, like, have you always been a lover of scary stories, or even, you know, just zombies? And what was it for you that kind of like turned you on, maybe even before you knew necessarily that you wanted to write music? I don't know, chicken egg, music came first, horror movies came first. What was it for you that got you into horror? Was there a particular film or character?
I'm trying to think of, I mean, God, I mean, back in the day, like when I was really young, I mean, obviously, like, you know, Night of the Living Dead, and I mean, this isn't really horror, but like even like Toxic Avenger stuff like that. Yeah. Like me and my friends, when I was, I mean, had to be like 9 or something, we got really into like special effects makeup, like Rick Baker stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know, that just led to kind of, it opened up all these movies in that genre that, I don't know, there's something about them. I don't know. There's something about, it's not easy to effectively be scared when you're watching something because, you know, you essentially know that it's not real if you're, you know, because it's a movie, you know?
Right.
But there are certain things throughout the years that have like scared the crap out of me where you're like, wow, like, you know, for the next 2 weeks, you're like waking up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and you're kind of like, you know, movie. There's just a lot of things like that. And I just love anything that can like really affect you on an emotional level like that. And horror is one of those genres that just, you know, really cuts deep.
No, for sure. And it, I feel like one thing that good for the horror genre that's come out of the pandemic is people were forced to stay home and maybe discover some horror films that they hadn't before.
Mm-hmm.
So more independent artists and directors are getting their chance to break into the mainstream. So you're starting to see, you know, films like Hereditary or, you know, stuff like that get a chance to play in that, in the theater. And I think that is really cool. And the fact that you can have multiple zombie stories with the common threat that they're zombies, but you know, Black Summer is completely different than 28 Days Later,
sure, which is
completely different than, you know, Quarantine. And it's like, I don't know how many other little, you know, subgenres and sublets that you can necessarily say that about. So that, I think, makes horror really cool too, where the vast variety of one common subject has like these like tons of little mini subjects that you can pull from is pretty rad.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's a real, zombies in particular are definitely, that's a crowded space for sure.
Right.
So I feel really fortunate to be working on this show because I do think that it in its own way has, you know, made its own sort of, like what you're talking about, its own space in there that is like refreshing and somewhat new, just a new spin on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, talking about those films for the horror movie fan side, what about the composer side? Was it a film or was it a musical artist or a piece that you heard at some point that made you decide that you were going to compose music?
I mean, yes and no. Yeah. I mean, yes and no. I mean, I started out playing piano when I was like 8. Mm-hmm. And then when I was around 12, 13, I started playing drums. And at that point I was off on the band, you know, mm-hmm. the band route, for years and years, you know, doing sessions with all sorts of people and this and that. And, the band that I ended up being in my, you know, late teens, early 20s was a band called Deadzy. And we put out a couple records on DreamWorks and, you know, got to tour the world and do the whole thing. And our music definitely fits very well in the horror genre. It's not scary music, but it's more on the kind of, you know, Nine Inch Nails, David Bowie, Brian Eno rock music tip.
Yeah, I dig that. Yeah.
And I think in kind of exploring, you know, I mean, films like, I guess now that I'm thinking about it more, you know, directors like Michael Mann really inspired me musically. I mean, obviously the movies are amazing that he makes, but you know, his movies, you know, people like Brian Eno, people like, you know, John Bryan, like those kind of, I gravitated towards that kind of stuff. I mean, definitely Michael Mann was a big one for me when I discovered his movies back in the day, like Heat and how music was used.
Right.
It just made me feel something that, I definitely wanted to do that. Even though I was in a band, I knew that, this is what I want to do. So I kind of was doing things simultaneously,
Right on. And with that now, with some of the composers that we've been fortunate enough to talk to, especially lately, the common thread between the movie composers has been the one cool thing about the pandemic is they all have their spots that they're able to work. It's not like being a cinematographer where you have to go in to a set. Do you have a spot of your own that you're kind of maybe not singled out necessarily, but you and your team, or just you have a spot that you have been working throughout everything, allowing you to get stuff done still?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely, at the beginning of when it was all starting to kind of go down in typical, zombie movie fashion, I swear this is what's happening. And the people around me that work with me were like, you're crazy, dude. No, I'm telling you. So I quickly got, set up a studio at my house.
Yeah,
just in case, just so I could work there. I had no idea my kids would not be in school for a year and just the craziness that happened. But so I set up a studio at home, and I have studios in in the Valley out in North Hollywood in Los Angeles, which is great. I mean, I'm here now. This is control room, and then a big live room, and other kind of production suites here. But when COVID got really bad, one of the guys that works for me, he continued to work at the studio, but we couldn't hang. So I pretty much worked from home, which was really cool actually, because I really pared down my setup and streamlined it. And it was, I ended up scoring, most of Black Summer. I scored this other show, The Crew, for Netflix. I scored this, this DreamWorks animated series I do, The Mighty Ones, all from home on such a smaller setup, and it completely worked great. but I would come in here once a week, but obviously now we're back, and it's of course nice to be in a room that is, meant for listening. There's a big difference. You kind of forget along the way of just the whole pandemic, I was we got to get rid of the studio. This is just we're paying for our lease and, nobody's there barely. And I'm glad that we stuck it out. So
over the course of it, just from a fan perspective, is there anything that you have discovered within the last year that you yourself are really digging watching?
I went back and kind of watched a bunch of stuff that I hadn't watched that has nothing to probably do with horror.
No, that's fine.
I don't even know if, what was I watching? I mean, I watched Succession and Billions, and I saw that, I don't know if you've seen the Night Stalker documentary for Netflix, which is amazing. Cause I'm, grew up in Los Angeles, Santa Monica.
Right.
And so I literally remember being a kid when that was happening. So it was just so cool to watch. Just a bunch of other stuff, all the movies that I kind of enjoy. I know from a filmmaking perspective, it kind of sucks to not have your movie in a theater, cause that's the medium that it should be seen in. But the fact that over the pandemic, there was just, you could stream movies that were coming out the next day. It was really kind of cool to be able to watch stuff from home,
Yeah, that whole HBO WB thing that they garnered together, that was the fans win, but the
filmmakers were not happy.
Yeah, they were pissed.
Understandably.
Yeah, and Christopher Nolan, you know, when he had, you know, he was super pissed about Tenet, and in our circle, you know, there were a couple of us on that side, you know, who had been, you know, graduated in the pandemic, and we're in, and a few more of us on our team that, you know, never, you know, are just volunteering and helping out and having fun. And so they didn't get it. And I'm like, no, man, like that's hundreds of hours of work, you know, not to mention, you know, the respect that someone like him is already owed type of a thing. But like, that is hundreds of people's hundreds of hours of work. Yeah. So yeah, to just kind of put it on streaming is shitty, but then you can't really downplay streaming, because without streaming, there would be like no Black Summer. There would be no independent horror. So it's like, streaming isn't bad. It's just when you're expecting your team to win the Super Bowl, so to speak, and you know, you're 10-6 and you're in the playoffs, but your aspirations are take a step back and look towards, you know, the future. That, you know, when you're expecting one thing and then overnight you're told another, that does suck. Also, Tenet, if you haven't watched it and you know anyone who watches that movie one time and tells you they know what the hell is going on, is lying to you.
And I haven't seen it. I need to watch it. But again, I was hoping to see it in the theater, but
yeah,
I don't think that's happening at this point. But yeah, streaming is amazing. I mean, think of the caliber of TV now. TV's not really
TV
anymore. I mean, these are like films. It's like when I watch Black Summer, I mean, it's a film. It's that level of storytelling and visual, you know, just the whole thing. So that part of streaming is great. And I actually just read, I think like yesterday, that now, you know, Steven Spielberg, who I don't think was maybe the biggest supporter of streamers, like they're starting to make, you know,
for streaming.
Netflix. Yeah.
That's funny that you say that, because it was Black Mirror, talking about Black Summer, Black Mirror, that really, I think, brought that point into focus, at least here in like mainstream USA, is that Netflix's series, I honestly think more so, you know, Disney Plus is rapidly doing that in the same vein, but they are like super features that bingeability factor.
That's the
and
best.
there's some like Hulu shows that I watch and some Apple TV shows that I watch that it almost feels like it's made because there's advertising in it, and it feels like it's still made like they know where the Netflix and Disney Plus as of late, like those shows. Yeah. Like you could sit there and if you've got the attention factor capability, watch an 8-hour movie in one sitting. Like, and it is an 8-hour movie. It's just broken up for your convenience.
Sure.
What do you have on the horizon that, you know, fans that are fans of your work from Black Summer, are the other shows that you had mentioned? Do you got anything coming out soonish that people would be wanting to check out?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned briefly, but I do this DreamWorks animated series called The Mighty Ones.
Yeah.
Kind of like it's not like Adult Swim in terms of like just, I feel like it's like it's skewed older because it's like, it's almost like a stoner comedy, but like, you know, a 13-year-old can watch it, but I think, you know, I can watch it and find it funny if you're into like animated series. It's cool. It's a definitely different. And that season 2 of that starts streaming on Hulu July 1st. And then I just finished this film called The Gateway with Olivia Munn and Frank Grillo and Bruce Dern.
Oh, nice.
That should come out at the end of the summer. which I'm excited about. It's like a cool indie. I mean, I started out, you know, doing, you know, just tons of indie features. So I love that world as well. And then hopefully we'll hear sometime soon about Black Summer 3. And you know, you can also stream the Kevin James multicam The Crew on Netflix, which I scored as well, that came out last month. So
awesome, man. Well, Alec, I thank you for taking the time out to be on our show. If anybody wants to touch base, are you on Twitter, Instagram, or you
know, any of that? I'm on Instagram just under my name, Alec Puro, or I mean, yeah, you can always my company's called Gramoscope Music, so you can always type in my name or Gramoscope Music just to kind of find out more, see, you know, more stuff that I got going on and all that. So yeah,
right on, man. Well, we look forward to checking out. We'll definitely check out that DreamWorks show.
Yeah,
that sounds like a good time, and we'll look forward to the new feature because that cast is very solid. So
yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one.
So down the line, we will have to get you back on at some point.
Definitely.
And talk about that stuff. So, Alec, again, man, thank you. Everybody, go check out Black Summer Season 2 if you haven't already. And it definitely will not disappoint you. And we will talk again, buddy.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate your time.
No problem.
So there you go, man. A little bit shorter episode. Next week, we have the director and cinematographer for new film Fear, which is an acronym for Forget Everything and Run. I will have checked that movie out, and we will have them on next week. Excited for it. Cannot wait to really just see what is going on with everything, man. We have a big trip coming up, going to Southern California. Part of that is going to be going to the Warner Brothers studio tour along with Avengers Campus, Disneyland. So a lot of cool content coming for you. You know, between those two things respectively, I'm really, really excited about all of that. So getting to try the new Harry Potter stuff at WB along with the DC Justice League display, you know, Tim Burton's original Batmobile, I'm really excited to see that. But just all of it, man. Harry Potter's closet. Like, I'm not just Star Wars, and I'm not just horror movies. I am a huge nerd. Proud one at that. So all this stuff does get me excited. Film is everything as far as fandom goes for me. And to be able to go walk the sets where some, you know, famous people, you know, and truly famous, not just 15 minutes of fame famous, but, you know, Vincent Price and some of those older horror films were filmed on that WB back lot. And there's still current, you know, horror films that are being filmed there, obviously. But I have just as much respect for WB doing their thing and how they do it and the product that they put out as Universal Studios, as far as a consumer out, you know, standpoint. Anyway, man, thank you for listening. That was my little rant. Check out the tribute show. It is on its own feed as well as this feed. We will probably continue the tribute show on this feed for a little bit longer and get to a point where, you know, hopefully that thing is doing well enough on its own. So we will see what happens in that regard. But that's all coming to the tribute show here to close out summer and get us ready for haunt season, as well as Campfire Chronicles, like I said, and some other fun stuff, projects on our YouTube channel to get you excited for the best time of the year. All right, man. I've rambled enough. Thank you for listening. Take a look at all of our social media. Follow us, Horrific Podcast, Horrific Network. And, yeah, stay spooky, everybody.